The following is a world-class Bullshitters exclusive.
Morning, pop culture. We are live. It is Monday, November the 12th, 2018. It's 7:47 a.m. and it's time to start Good Morning, Pop Culture. So I wasn't able to stream on Friday due to technical reasons, but I did on Saturday, and I'm here on Monday, to start Good Morning, Pop Culture. So hello and welcome to everyone here. It is Monday. It is the start of another week. But hey, you're starting with Good Morning, Pop Culture, so it can't be that bad. Question mark, quotation, exclamation, parentheses. But we're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving, which is the best way to spend a food coma, you know, with family. So I'm looking forward to that. We're going to be having a couple changes here on the channel due to the holiday. So I had originally stated that World Class Bullshitters was going to record a bonus 150 spectacular for the patrons. Well, we did record that bonus 150 spectacular for the patrons, and it sucked. Like, really bad. So, no, I'm not going to release something that stupid. Even if you're a patron of the channel and you want to hear more of us, it's bad. So, that's going to die permanently. It's never going to come out. It's done, dead, forget about it. Maybe we'll bring one copy to a convention, and if you're the first person that gets to our table, we'll give it to you for free. But it is horseshit. So, we're going to do, I'll make a change, because we don't want episode 150 of World Class Bullshitters to come out on Thanksgiving Day when everyone's in a food coma or going Black Friday shopping or just doing family stuff because it's a holiday. So what we'll do is this coming week will be episode 149 of the podcast. As usual, it'll be awesome. Then next week, we're going to do something themed that's going to be pre-recorded here on the channel, and it will not be episode 150. And then the following week, whatever that is, November 29th or something, Thursday after Thanksgiving, then episode 150 will be live here on YouTube. So we're going to give the show the pomp and circumstance it deserves because, hey, it's the epitome of pop culture, and we definitely want to do something special and fun. So that is your little bit of housekeeping for here on the channel. So today's show is all about you guys, your entertainment, the future of all of our entertainment. Disney Plus, The Mandalorian, The Womandalorian, The Muffdalorian, whatever you want to call it. We get a little more information, news, rumors, that sort of thing, coming down the pipe from Disney. Plus, we have some more confirmation on the Disney Plus streaming service, and some rumors about Lucasfilm that may or may not be true, because I was sent some screenshots, and then as I go to look deeper into the story, there's nothing on the site. So, you're going to be hearing this story probably from Jeremy and Ethan and a couple other channels, but I did the research, and I don't think there's much out there for it. So I'm going to make you guys wait to hear what that's about. So, we already have a super chat rolling. First off, from Jonathan Hurst. Thank you very much, Jonathan Hurst. That says, "Morning, Jeff. Enjoyed the veteran stream Saturday." Jonathan, you're not alone. I really enjoyed it myself. I had a great time listening to the guys talk about their past experiences in the military, how it's changed their lives, how they look at entertainment. It was a lot of fun. The only people that didn't like it were YouTube. So, they took it and demonetized it and messed it up. So I got to get that worked out. But if you guys follow the Twitter link, it'll be available. But right now, if you look on the channel, you won't be able to find it. That's not about, me hiding it. I was very proud of what we did. It was a good discussion. We had our friend Sketch Therapy. We had Jeff the Iron Wolf, Yakov Merkin, who wrote the Galaxy Ascendant series. We had Black Angus Reviews. We had Salvador, our friend Rugis. And we also had, do we have one more? Or was that everybody? I think that was everybody. If I forgot you, I apologize. I didn't forget you. I just didn't say your name right this second. But yeah, Jonathan, I had a great time too. It was fun. It was something different. Yeah, we ended up talking about Star Wars and entertainment and all that stuff, and that's fine. But I just wanted to, you know, give a platform to people who have interesting stories, have led interesting lives, and may have not had the ability to do so. So, as some are celebrating veterans today, thank you very much. I think I'm going to give my grandma a call and say, hey, grandma, thanks for fighting in World War II. You alone did all of it. And she'll have a laugh, and then she'll ask me if I called everybody for Christmas, and I'll say, Grandma, it's not even Thanksgiving yet. Why would I call them already? But today is Monday, and I've been wanting to do something each and every Monday here on the channel, but I get sidetracked because I get so excited and I want to just start the show, and we're about to start the show, but I wanted to take a quick look at the weekend box office and make a quick point about China. So here is the weekend box office. We had Dr. Seuss's The Grinch. It opened at number one with a $66 million box office. Bohemian Rhapsody is holding pretty tight at number two with another $30 million added to the coffers. Number three was Overlord. I found this to be interesting that it debuted so low at number three. And this seemed like Call of Duty Zombies the movie. When you have this phenomenon sweeping the world where every year people buy Call of Duty, play World War II zombies, space zombies, horror zombies, all these zombies, you'd think that zombies would be hot. But no, zombies are cold product, just like the skin and the blood that pumps or doesn't pump through their veins. It's over and done with. So Overlord opened up at number three. And the funny part is, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's sitting about an 88% or 81%. So it's doing pretty well in terms of fan and critical scores, but it's just not hitting at the box office. Now, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't know. It's J.J. Abrams, so another J.J. Abrams failure just, you know, makes me chuckle. It takes away less and less credibility from the man's name. But it just didn't really appeal to me. I remember seeing the trailer and I thought, nah, no thank you. So I'd like to know what you guys think about that. And then rounding out the top five is The Girl in the Spider's Web, A New Dragon Tattoo Story. And that's not going to make its money back. So I liked The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo quite a bit. Was that 2011? Daniel Craig, Rooney Mara. Joel and I went to see that. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool and different. And then they just didn't make another one. And then this comes out. And I think they should have capitalized in, 2014 maybe? Right before he made his next Bond movie? That could have been the prime time. But I think the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series is dead in the water. That's a franchise that doesn't really hold any weight. So that was your opening for the weekend box office. I'm surprised Bohemian Rhapsody is still kicking ass. My mom, who hates Queen, went and saw it and couldn't tell me how great it was enough. She kept going on and on and on. I'm like, Mom, you whined and complained all week how you have to see this Freddie Mercury movie. I don't like Queen. I don't want to see the movie. And then you go see it, and the first thing you do is say, Jeffrey, I gotta tell you how great it was. I'm just like, oh my God, Mom, thank you for whining for a week and then telling me how great it was. So then I took her to breakfast, and then we didn't talk about the movie anymore. So if you've seen it, press one. I'm expecting to see some people be excited. Press one for that tire tread. Me, I just don't like Queen the music. Maybe I'll catch the movie on Netflix down the road. It's making great money, so congratulations to that guy who plays Mr. Robot. Lou DiMarzo, thank you very much for your super chat. November 12th, 1955. That was when November 12th, 1955 was the day I went back. That was the day of the famous Hill Valley lightning storm. Oh, Back to the Future 2 reference. Oh, man. That is a good film. So that would have been October 26, 1980, or 7th, 85, alternate 1985. But yes, today is the day Marty McFly has returned back from the past. So he's now back to the future, quotation, question mark. Back to the Future, as you guys know, is my favorite film, greatest movie of all time in my eyes, will never change. And it's nice to see the memes and the references and Lou DiMarzo sending in a chat about Back to the Future. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but it's not too late. It's still, and I got until midnight tonight. So maybe after I do the video, I've been working on the comic a lot. We can, I can watch Back to the Future as a nice relaxation from a lot of the work I've been doing. So, let's see where we are in terms of views. Oh, we're five away. That means we're about to start, folks. Nice, nice, nice. So let's take this off the screen. The box office numbers. Oh, I wanted to make a point about the box office. I wasn't just showing you those to say, hey guys, look, it made money. So, the Chinese box office was that great mythical thing that everyone was going for a couple years back. And then they cater Star Wars and MCU movies and Transformers to it, and to varying degrees of success. But the China box office, Venom just opened to $102 million opening. Tom Hardy starring Venom injected some of its much-needed juice into the Chinese box office with a blockbuster $102 million first weekend opening. The film crushed other new releases and holdovers alike. So, Venom, $102 million opening weekend, making buku bucks in the Chinese market. Now, everyone loves to say how Sony Spider-Man movies suck, and they do for the most part. There's two great ones, and the rest are kind of eh. But there's something about Venom that is catching on. Much like Bohemian Rhapsody, it seems like critics shit on it, but then people went out and saw it and loved it. So don't listen to the critics, question. But I brought this up because I was like, how does this reflect upon the Chinese market? Is it true that the Chinese market doesn't want any American films? And I thought, no, they just don't want Star Wars, because I pulled up the numbers. Star Wars The Last Jedi opened to $28.7 million, and then it dropped 92% to $2.4 million in the second week. So like I said, almost a year ago at this point, that's a new lap record for Chinese embarrassment. So folks at Disney, Star Wars, Lucasfilm, go away. Do not go to China. Do not make your films to cater to the Chinese market. It didn't work with Rose Tico. It's not going to work with anyone. China doesn't want Star Wars. So it's funny how people will make the excuse for Disney in Star Wars, but they won't ever say, hey, congratulations, Venom. You're not a piece of crap. But I didn't watch it due to many reasons. Principles, mostly. No Spider-Man, no watch. It's like making a Vulture film without Spider-Man. Not going to watch it. The Terrible Tinker. Six people will go watch that. I won't be one of those six. So, let's see. Where are we at? We are past the 200. Let's start talking about the thing that has captured my imagination all weekend. And it wasn't Red Dead Redemption 2. By the way, I'm burnt out on that game. I didn't even play it that much. But it's like, do a mission, ride a horse. Do a mission, ride a horse. I'm fucking tired of riding horses everywhere. I'm not even Dion. I'm not afraid. I'm just bored. That's why I didn't stream this weekend. I have other stuff to do. Working on the comic is more exciting than playing Red Dead Redemption 2. So the Disney Plus streaming service. Raise your hand, and I'll believe you if you tell me you're raising your hand, if you're going to get it. Now, I know a lot of people are into streaming services. But as a consumer who's got, you know, my finger on the pulse pretty well, this just seems extraneous. It's just one more streaming service that isn't really going to make much sense for me. Marvel movies, I will go see in theaters. If I want to pick them up, I'll get them on Blu-ray. Disney's not going to cut out Blu-rays to build up their streaming service, because if that's the case, I just won't buy their movies or watch them again. I'll see them in theaters once, and that's enough for me. There are a few MCU films I've only seen once. I have only watched Doctor Strange all the way through once. I've only seen Thor the Dark World all the way through once, as well as Ragnarok. I haven't even watched Ragnarok a second time. But this streaming service, they're banking on it to be the future. And I got a couple little pieces of financial news coming from Mashable.com. So I don't know if that's really that reliable. But they're using quotes from other Let's go with CNBC Markets. Don't worry about their political views, but the money's on the point. So, the Wall Street analysts are saying that Disney's earnings are solid, but the focus on the company's plan to deliver content through a streaming service is solid as well. Barclays says that Disney's upcoming investors are likely to be a catalyst for the stock, given the importance of the initiative, and then augmented further with Fox's content production and international assets, as well as a majority ownership in Hulu, we believe the new Disney can deliver healthy growth, says Morgan Stanley. Healthy growth. Okay. So, much like healthy growth, or health in general, sometimes you gotta cut out something. You gotta cut out the sickness. Some people would say you gotta cut out Lucasfilm and Disney, and that's the sickness. But, as we already know, The Mandalorian, The Womandalorian, possibly, The Muffdalorian, as we call it here on the channel, is their next big thing. And then, since we've met last met, which I'm looking forward to discuss with the Good Morning Pop Culture crew, the Cassian Andor show, the streaming Cassian Andor show, the post episode 3, pre Rogue One, pre episode 4, Adventures of Cassian Andor, the milquetoast action hero who is very ineffectual. I mean, I am all for Star Wars that is free of garbage and maybe, you know, harkens back to episode 4 era. That's where they kind of hooked me with Rogue One. Now, again, going back, it's kind of boring. But they're doing this to try to entice the older audience. But they've gone out of their way to let you know that it's a cheaper service, mainly targeted at kids with no R-rated content whatsoever. So it creates a divide. It's like, if you want the Disney streaming service, cool. But if you want everything we do, well, then you gotta have two other streaming services. So that takes that $5 investment to a minimum of a $20 investment per month. Then you lump that with cable, you lump that with your internet bill, because some people stream and bundle those together. You're starting to add just more and more. Here's the thing, you're paying for more content, you don't have more time in your life. If you had, you know, 47 hours in a day, and you had only had to work 8 and sleep 8, well, then you could waste your time watching DuckTales reruns or episodes of Tailspin or something like that. But this seems like it's nostalgia, the streaming service, and it'll work for a while, but the people that will be nostalgic for it will kind of move on. It's like me. I grew up with DuckTales, was it Marsupilami, Bonkers, all these weird, obscure Disney shows, Darkwing Duck. Those are the types of things they might tug at my heartstrings with and go, oh man, I could really go for some Darkwing Duck or this and that. But then I got to get up and do this show and do the comics and stuff like that, which isn't a complaint. And then you realize, I don't really have much time for this. I don't have kids. And then kids nowadays, while they would watch the stuff with other streaming devices or the possibility of, you know, toys that they would play with, maybe it'd be a little harder to get them in front of the TV screen. So I've talked to people that firmly believe that Disney is growing so big that it'll be hard to manage. And that could be the case. It will be funny for me personally, I will laugh, if they get so big that they can't manage everything and they begin to collapse. I think Disney's best bet as a consumer, there can be too much of anything. You know, too much Star Wars, too much James Bond, too much Batman. There can be these things. But I don't really, for me, I don't want Disney outside of theme parks. And I don't even want to go to the theme parks that much. It seems like the perfect thing for them, the theme parks. Once they start buying the shit I like is when I really have the problem. And then they change it. You know, they're changing Deadpool. They're changing this character. They're changing that character. And before you know it, everything you know and love is changed and gone. So we had two super chats roll in. First off, it's £5 that says message retracted, so thank you very much. Either, you know, even though it's retracted. And secondly, LSU fan Jeremy, hello. The market already has way too many streaming services, each with a respectable good series, but they all add up for monthly memberships. Thank you. It all adds up for monthly memberships. And now YouTube's trying to get in on that, and that ain't gonna work. But they gotta take into account how much people make, how much time they have. It seems great. And the weird part is Disney's so late to the streaming service game. I mean, I've had Netflix for 8 years at this point. And I felt like I was late to the party on Netflix. My buddy in college had it in 2009, streaming when you had a limit. When you could first get Netflix streaming on Xbox 360, my buddy Toaf had it. And I used to go over and we would watch like Con Air and just random movies. And it was so bizarre and different. And now it's a part of everyday life. But you talked about respectable series, but they all add up. Yeah, Netflix has their own show. Netflix is not the best streaming service in my opinion. But they do have like, they have the Marvel shows. Okay, those are cool. That'll keep me hooked. Then they have the they bought Black Mirror. Then they have their own cooking shows. They have this, that, and the other. Netflix is trying to be like a TV station that you stream at your own leisure. It has something, you know, hypothetically for everybody. Disney has always branded themselves as good family entertainment. And the most popular shit over the last couple of years hasn't been good family entertainment. I mean, if we're looking back on TV, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, the big TV shows aren't family shows. The big sitcoms aren't really family-oriented anymore either, like The Big Bang Theory. Yeah, families can watch it. Kids and teenagers probably are the only ones that find it funny. But it's not really anything about family. Disney used to have this thing about, oh, we're going to have shows about kids, for kids, stuff like that. Those days are over. The days of the teenager being a marketable thing is over. And what I mean by that is, Marvel Comics used to say, oh, the teenage superhero, the child superhero from DC, Robin, the Boy Wonder, all these things. Those were big selling points. Not anymore. You have, for example, you'll have your Disney, your teen shows on Disney, or your Teen Nick shows and stuff like that. But again, that's not what they're trying to sell you. Those aren't going to sell. Like, the Sweet Life and Zack and Cody revival isn't going to sell the Disney streaming service. Star Wars is their attempt to. Who does Star Wars appeal to mostly? Guys that aren't little kids. People that grew up with Star Wars that are nostalgic or grew up with the prequels. So let's say, I don't know, 15 to 60-year-olds. But the big chunk of that is other stuff. I mean, when you're in college, you have a finite amount of money. When I was in college, I had barely anything. I could get some booze on the weekends and maybe go out to Five Guys once a week, depending on my check. I wasn't going to bank on getting the Disney streaming service and doing all these extra things, you know, in college. So it's just, but Netflix I would, because that has a wider array. You can invite people over, like, okay, let's be honest, you're going to invite a girl over. Hey, you want to come over and watch a movie on Netflix? Okay. Hey, you want to come over and watch the Disney streaming service? That just is like, you know, an anti-aphrodisiac. That, you know, if you want to dry somebody up, you just go up to them and say, Disney. And boof, you're like Thanos. You just dust just away. Observer Dude, thank you very much for your super chat. I think I should take back the thank you, though. Because it says, Back to the Future remake. After Dr. Emma Brown gets shot by Trump supporters, Michelle McFly, vegan SJW, travels back to 1950s to fight racism. The words Back to the Future and then followed by the word remake, they sadden me beyond belief. That hurts. Ugh. It really bothers me. Don't joke about that, Observer Dude. You're gonna kill this channel. Not just the show, this channel. I'm just going to go lay down forever and I'm going to cry. Oh, God, no. Actually, I'll only have that reaction if they do remake Back to the Future. So, folks, let's hope that Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis live forever, longer than all of us combined times 10. Because they said as long as they're alive, there will never be a Back to the Future 4 or a Back to the Future remake. And we need some men with conviction in Hollywood. People will sell out in a heartbeat. There are good remakes. Back to the Future, you don't need to remake it because it's perfect. You could argue, well, it is a remake. And I would say, well, it's an adaptation of a book, a more faithful adaptation of a book, which appeared on TV. And the TV show's great, but it is a TV show and it cut out a lot of stuff. Back to the Future is a wholly original property for that film. Everything they wanted to do, they did do. It was a huge success. It made the franchise overall has probably made billions of dollars in terms of box office, then merchandise, then other stuff. Think of all the people that went to Universal Studios just to ride the ride. So I think there is a lifespan on a franchise, and Back to the Future has definitely, it's like an old person. You know, I've worked 50 years, I did this, I did that. They can enjoy their retirement, their Social Security check, and just ride off into the sunset. It's time for Back to the Future to ride off into the sunset, to never be gleaned for any more ideas again. So this Disney streaming service is their big bread and butter. Now, I have a question. Now, this is the big question of the day for everyone out here. And I really, this is what I want everyone to take away from the show and the live stream and the pre-recorded episode later on. Here's the question. Now, this streaming service comes out in late 2019. So let's assume late 2019 is November, a year from now. Let's say it launches November 12th, 2019. If Star Wars Episode 9 underperforms, will Disney say it was due to the new streaming service and attempt to brush its failure under the rug? What I mean by that is, let's say Episode 9 has a lame opening weekend. I guarantee you that you'll see your Scott Mendelsons and your John Campias and all these other box office analysts going out of their way to say, well, everyone signed up for the Disney streaming service. People would rather stay at home and watch content. That's why the next Star Wars movie is going to appear exclusively on the streaming service. I don't think the streaming service is going to be the reason why Episode 9 takes a hit. Episode 9 is going to take a hit because of Episode 8 and Episode 7 and Solo and Kathleen Kennedy, Rian Johnson, and all these other things out there. Those will be the sole reasons why Episode 9 gets hurt at the box office. But I'm thinking that they'll use this excuse. Now, do you think that I'm off the reservation by saying, oh no, the streaming service won't hurt? I mean, maybe Martha and Thomas Wayne don't want to take little Bruce to the theater to see Star Wars Episode 9, so they just get in the streaming service, and he can watch The Mandalorian, and he can watch Episode 7 and 8, because he loves Star Wars. Don't know why. All because his dad showed him the old stuff and the new stuff. Well, son, Luke Skywalker's back. But Dad, Luke Skywalker died. Oh, I'm sorry. But that seems to be like a nice out for a lot of this stuff. LSU fan Jeremy, thank you very much for your super chat again. We need more original ideas, but the movie industry has a compulsion to mess with the past and alter it. Maybe that's what they mean by let the past die. Kill it if you have to. LSU Jeremy, that's a very interesting point. I think they said that line and put it in the trailer to kind of fight off the guys that are, you know, holding on, the old Star Wars fans that they think are holding the franchise back. Personally, I don't find that to be the case. I find that to be just a way to say, fuck you all, we're going to move forward with our new Rey future, the future that everybody loves. By everybody, I mean Kathleen Kennedy and a couple of her cronies. But Hollywood is lacking original ideas. I found an article this morning, and it said something along the lines of why Hollywood is constantly looking for new adaptations. And I thought to myself, where is the originality? An adaptation is fun. It's different sometimes. It gets a property in front of your eyes. I love Stephen King movies. Guilty as charged. I've never read any of his books. I do now own a copy of It, which I picked up recently. But adaptations are a little different. They don't come along. To me, adaptations aren't as lazy or as blatant as a remake. Because, like, to remake Total Recall, what's the purpose? You nerfed the violence. The special effects aren't anything spectacular. You're trying to use an IP that's going to make you more money, but all you've done is killed it. Same with anything. Now, sometimes remaking or readapting works, like Judge Dredd, because the first time is garbage with Sylvester Stallone, and then you come back with Carl Urban and you kick the shit out of anything else. That's a good remake, a good reimagining, a good reinterpretation. But when you go for a Back to the Future or a Star Wars, or if you go to remake, I don't know, I'm trying to look at a movie. If you were to remake Austin Powers with today's sensibilities, it wouldn't work. Or if you were to go out and remake, some people say Star Trek Into Darkness is a remake of The Wrath of Khan, and a lesser one at that. There you go. That's where you create the division between the fans and the people that produce the content. It's kind of an interesting dynamic, LSU Jeremy, but originality is not something in Hollywood that is praised anymore. It's about what are the optics on the situation? How can I look in front of all my other celebrity counterparts? I know this sounds really vain. Not vain. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I know this sounds really, I don't know, maybe this reflects on me poorly, but I'm more comfortable with knowing that Hollywood's focused on making a $1 billion movie, so they put in shit that everyone's going to go see. Like, I find a Michael Bay film to be more pure than a Lucasfilm Disney Star Wars movie. That's just me. For those wondering, I am not a Harry Potter fan, so I don't know anything about the new one that came out or is coming out. I don't like Harry Potter. I don't like Lord of the Rings. Sorry. Just don't do magic and fantasy and stuff like that. If those are your franchises that you love, thank you for sticking with us. I'm glad we have our common ground of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Back to the Future, Beverly Hills Cop, all of those things. But there's nothing that gets me really pumped about those franchises. Doesn't mean they're bad. Just telling you how I feel about them overall. So, a nice thing to talk about with this Disney streaming service is a rumor that Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed himself, might be joining The Mandalorian. Now, a lot of people look at an announcement of a... Hold on. I'm into film. Thank you very much for your super chat. Hollywood needs a creative enema. Well, the Joker was right. This town needs an enema. I'm not going to do the fake sound effect. But they really do need something just jammed right up there uncomfortably and just suck out the crap. Do colonics. You know, do you do colonics? Boom, a candy bar came out from when you were 12. If you can tell me what movie that's from, I'm going to laugh my ass off. But yeah, they do need a creativity enema. They need, like, I saw a comment. This isn't my comment, so don't take it that way. But somebody was posting about the wildfires in California, laughing about how Hollywood deserves it. I'm like, a lot of innocent people are getting hurt and killed. So I don't agree with that sentiment. But maybe they need, like, an ideological wildfire where they just wipe out all the stupidity and they focus on good stuff. And good is subjective. Put it like this. Stuff that has less of an agenda, that exists not to promote ideas, but to promote big box office returns. You know, the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie made money. And that, to me, that's more of a harmless action flick. I like the first one. I haven't really gotten into the other ones. But with this new one, you're going to have a female Jack Sparrow. They're going to try to make points about it. It's like Hollywood doesn't get it that your average person, male or female, just doesn't buy into this shit. None of you out there buy into it. So, back to what I was, the point I was making, though, Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers is rumored to be in The Mandalorian. Now, some people like to say, oh, they cast a black actor for diversity or this or that. This is nothing like that. Carl Weathers is so awesome, so cool. He's old, I'll admit, but much like Lando Calrissian, he's always, or Billy Dee Williams, I should say, it's always nice to see the guy do something. I mean, we went from Rocky to Predator to Happy Gilmore. I mean, Carl Weathers, he's just a good addition. And so I'm excited if they can do something cool. I don't want a Saul Guerrero type character because he sucked. You know, Forrest Whitaker, I don't look at a Forrest Whitaker casting as a weird diversity thing. Some people might get on the high horse or low horse or a horse and just act like it is that. But with Carl Weathers, I don't think that's the case. Tim Riggs, thank you very much for a super chat. Disney takes all the flavor and spice out of the franchises it manages. What starts as a spicy, complicated flavor turns out to be bland ash. Ooh, I like that. I think I'm going to take a screenshot of that and use that in my everyday life. I really like that one. Hold on 1 second. Boom. They do know how to suck the flavor out of everything. The lifeblood, if you will. I really do believe that Disney is the place where creativity goes to die. It's all bright and colorful. Oh, we're going to Disney World. And then you find out Mickey Mouse is fake. It's just a guy in a suit. Main Street USA isn't really somewhere you can live. It's got a lot of problems. There's a sinkhole. There's just never a silver lining to the Disney thing. It's all fake, gaga garbage. And I just hate to watch my favorite things go down that path. I don't know what they did to Kevin Feige. Did they replace him with a robot like in Halloween 3? Did they, did they pay him off to, you know, bastardize Marvel? We don't know. But we've seen it every year with a new franchise. Maybe there's some hope with 007 where Barbara Broccoli says, well, we're not going to make Bond a woman. Okay, well, at least we're getting halfway there. But I take that also as, well, he'll probably be black in the next movie. And then people just aren't going to go watch it. Idris Elba said no. You can't force these actors to make, you know, to do jobs that they don't want to do. That's the beauty of today's world. You can't force these actors. But everybody just seems to be on this path to ultimate destruction. And Disney seems to be the shepherd. It's like all these properties are their sheep. And they're just, you know, herding them up. And then here's the cliff. And we're just going to push you over the fucking cliff. We're going to take the best parts of your corpse. We're going to Frankenstein it. And we're going to create our new ultimate franchise that nobody really likes. If only Disney could invest in mind control, I think they would pump all their money into that. And then they'd get a massive return. Because then they could trick us into going to see their shit. They wouldn't even have to trick us. They'd just say, go watch our shit. And we would. Because we're controlled, mindless automatons. But you're all good individuals. Think of that. Let's see. Somebody's trying to guess the quote. Let me make sure that the person that I'm about to give credit to got it. And yeah, let's see. Noriel Sta Maria got it right. So yes, it's from Beverly Hills Cop 3. So congratulations. You are the listener of the day. I'm very surprised and impressed that someone knows Beverly Hills Cop 3 as well as I sadly do. Yeah, it's funny. People were talking about Doctor Who in the chat as well. Doctor Who was one of the things we talked about on last night's Patreon thing. By the way, we have like 410 people. Can we get 400 thumbs up, please? 410. But for those out there that are patrons, like Tim Riggs and other people, we were going to do a World Class Bullshitters episode 150 spectacular with all the other bullshitters. And we got most of them, and it was terrible. And I'm not trying to, you know, brush it under the rug so quickly, but it won't get released. I went into it in the beginning of the show, but it is very, very, very bad. But we did talk about Doctor Who. And since I'm not going to release that, let me at least quote some of the stuff we were talking about. So my friend Loudy, Coach Loudy, good dude. I called him a normie in a positive way, and he didn't take offense to it. He got what I was talking about. What I was trying to... He's a big Doctor Whovian fan, or he's a Whovian, a Doctor Who fan, if you will. He was a guy who got in, loves Eccleston, Tennant, Matt Smith, Capaldi to a lesser degree, but he bought into the stuff hardcore. Now, Loudy, I wouldn't call him a progressive guy. He doesn't buy into the SJW shit, but Loudy is the farthest thing from a racist. He's a very open dude, ethnic background, all this stuff. I don't really have anything bad to say about him, except for his penchant for women's behinds. And I'm not going to get into that live on the air. If you're a patron, you know what we're talking about. But we talked about Doctor Who. We talked about how, after the Rosa Parks episode, he has been broken. He got into this whole political rant about, you know, Doctor Who used to be about this and space travel and fun and this heavy-handed bullshit. And, like, every episode is just another piece of, you know, hey, look how woke we are. And the thing is, the greatest part is the show's tanking. I'm trying to pull up an article right now about the Doctor Who ratings. So this is good news to me, because this is representative of what I've been talking about. Every franchise that takes the woke pill dies. It's like, basically, wokeness is cyanide. There we go. Wokeness and cyanide. The next comic from World Class Bullshitters. But you take something that's so classic, that works so well, and then all of a sudden it tries to become this thing that it's not. Oh, we're going to use our platform for good. The thing is, good is subjective. What you consider good, we consider preachy bullshit. You know, fighting for a cause, fighting for something that ended a decade, 2 decades, 10 decades ago, you're fighting for these things. Like, they had an episode about Rosa Parks and, you know, civil rights. Okay, well, it's nice to be able to say what you want to say and, you know, be any color and vote and all this shit. It's cool. We're very much past that. 2018 is not 1958. Let's be thankful that we're 60 years removed from all that stuff in the South. But a show like Doctor Who really doesn't have much a place to talk about this. I found it odd that a British show from 60 years later is trying to, like, remove the scab and talk about these things that have happened. It's like, okay, cool. And then they had one the next week where a man was pregnant and it got into the transgender rights issues and stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's more topical. You're trying to hide it underneath an alien. Okay. There you're actually getting points for the creativity. But it's like every week, it's like, how can we virtue signal on each episode of Doctor Who? Like, first off, it was the new female doctor. And I've read countless accounts of women on Facebook bitching about it. Are those women sexist? I doubt it. They only use the phrase sexist because you dislike the change. Oh, you don't like what we're doing? Well, then you're a sexist. No, I don't dislike what you're doing. You made me a crap meal. I'm not going to eat it. I don't like it. I don't care what gender made the damn food. You overcooked my pancakes at first watch. But now we're back to this Doctor Who thing. And Doctor Who rating drops to 6.1 million viewers for the latest episode after the series high of 8.2 million views for the opener, as some viewers label the brand of the show too PC. Now, I think that a huge drop like that is indicative. It's like in China, when 92% left Star Wars. Now all these people are leaving Doctor Who. Maybe it's not as massive of a drop, but it is a big drop. And now we're going to have Doctor Who, you know, fall and fall and fall. Tim Riggs, thank you very much again. Disney is the EA of movies. Buy an IP, suck the life out of it until nothing is left. Let's bland it up in search of this ever elusive broader market appeal. Yeah, broader market appeal, I guess, would be the proper phrase, the preferred nomenclature of what is actually going on. But I don't like when Disney does this shit, guys. I wish there was an anti-Disney, another company that was into creativity and originality that had so much money, but I guess they wouldn't be that big financially unless they took the Disney approach. I don't know. Universal could do it. Universal has their Super Mario movie coming out. If there's one thing that has the nostalgia and attachment rate of Star Wars, it's like Nintendo. Because Nintendo and Star Wars are very similar. They're things that people grew up with that is unique and individual for each person. And when a new product from Nintendo or a new Star Wars movie came out, historically, more people than you can fucking possibly imagine show up to an event. I remember the lines for Episode 7 were literally wrapped around the building. That's not an exaggeration. I have videos of it on my Facebook page. Nintendo, when the Switch came out, or the Wii, or the Wii U, or any of these things come out, more people than you can possibly imagine just descend upon a place. Like, you don't know these people are Nintendo fans or Star Wars fans, but they just show up, and boom. Switch sold 47 billion units. You can use that power for the good or bad. That's what Disney's chosen to do. But you could do, Universal could do their Mario thing. They got the theme park. You just hit them with the nostalgia. Like, if you take Disney Star Wars out and, like, the Nintendo Wii U era out, Nintendo and Star Wars kind of hit me in the same way. Hell, when Nintendo and Star Wars had exclusive games, I was really happy. Rogue Squadron 2, anyone? But if you really want to challenge that, you could do the Nintendo thing. Because I know if I'm in Florida and they said, Jeff, free ticket to go see Star Wars Land, free ticket to go see Nintendo Land. Even if Episode 7 wasn't the thing it was, or Rian Johnson was the dick, Nintendo Land just sounds so fun. So fun. I mean, bright, colorful, the blocks, all this shit, and there's so many things you could do in Nintendo Land. It's like Star Wars, the shit in Star Wars can't be done or really replicated. It's like, hey, I want to shoot stormtroopers. I can't really shoot a stormtrooper. Well, I want to do this. Well, you can't do that. And it's Disney World, and it's always been weird. It's like Westworld. I'm waiting for them to replace the humans with robots. Maybe they have. Maybe they killed the humans and replaced them with robots and used their brains. I don't know. But I think that is a contender for something that could actually stop Disney's taking over the world. DeMille Jr., thank you very much. Rosa Parks wasn't the first on the bus. Claudette Colvin did it first. Okay. I guess we just don't learn about it that way. Especially in school as a kid, it's all you hear about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And that's about as far as they teach you. Then again, DeMille Jr., this was 1998 when I think I had the last Civil Rights Movement class stuff. So 20 years ago. I mean, obviously I know the stuff, but we have this thing here in Cincinnati called the Underground Freedom Center, and it's, you know, a museum about slavery and civil rights and stuff. And we went in high school, so this would have been 04, and that's like the last time I did anything like that. It's this building, it got a tax thing, it was a big deal, and now people do go, but people don't go as much as they used to. It's in a weird place, too, because it goes Bengals Stadium, Underground Freedom Center, all kinds of new apartments and restaurants, Red Stadium, and then the arena. So it's like one of these things are not like the other. And people do go. I'm not going to act like it's not important, but people don't go as much. It was a thing. But for me, I don't know about Claudette Colvin. So that is my own ignorance. I apologize. We need an anti-Hollywood Hollywood. There we go. Cesario Japan, thank you very much. SJW, suicide is painless. Sorry, MASH. Sorry, MASH. I don't like MASH, but if you do, more power to you. I'm not here to dump on your taste in TV shows. But to me, MASH was always the show that came on after The Simpsons, which signified it was time to go to bed. So there we are. A lot of people are very angry at Doctor Who. They say it deserves to fail. Hey, I want one of these things to fail to send a message to these people. Send a message of, look, this kind of stuff doesn't work. It's so heavy-handed. It's all at once. It's an avalanche of SJW rhetoric. And it only hurts you because it pisses us off and moves us to other things. What was that? Was that Doom Immortal? Not Doom Immortal. Doom Eternal game. The one that's coming out that made fun of the Mortally Challenged or whatever. People laughed at that joke, and id Software didn't back down. And now people are going to go support that game because they, on the surface, it seems like it's kind of sticking it to this overly PC culture. People are out there buying Red Dead Redemption, and if Grand Theft Auto has the balls that it should have, they'll make fun of this culture too, and that game will sell tons of copies and be a movement. I think people are ready for this big anti-PC SJW thing to come out, and it's got to be something big that does it, but it's also got to be something that it would fit naturally with. Grand Theft Auto makes fun of everything. So I think now's the perfect time for Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto used to be like an Eminem album, where it's something you listen to at home, he says some shit, you laugh, and, you know, it seems like it's vulgar, but sometimes it has deeper meaning. That's what Grand Theft Auto should, in my opinion, should do. It sounds like Star Trek Discovery all over again. Yeah, bad. So now, while we're on the topic of the Disney Plus streaming service and Lucasfilm, let's talk about something that I was alerted to over the weekend. Last night. So, has anyone here heard of Glassdoor.com? Glassdoor.com is a website where you can review a company you work at, file a resume, do all of these things. So, I was alerted to these terrible negative reviews about Lucasfilm on Glassdoor.com. And I saw the screenshots and I looked deeper into it. So, you may hear this story from other YouTube channels, but here's my take officially. So, if anyone has to ask, I covered it early Monday, beat everyone to the damn punch. But it's swirling around Twitter, and I'm not saying the person that sent me the information, the people, I should say, have fabricated it, but I looked deeper into it. And right now, here we go. This is the official site. I had to even log in and make an account so I could view everything on here. So I looked at some of the reviews. Now, there's words going around that Kathleen Kennedy is being eviscerated on Glassdoor.com. But when I actually research it, we're getting to, it's a 3.4 out of 5, 58% would recommend to a friend, 89% approve. Now, if we start scrolling through these ratings, the first one that was posted on, and this is sorted by date, on October the 10th of 2018, is titled Manager, and it says it disapproves of the CEO. It says, I worked at Lucasfilm for over 10 years, pros, talented and good people, film industry, cons, discrimination, politics, management, clicks, HR. Okay. That sounds like a fair critique of somebody that's angry at the place. Then we start going back. This is October of 2018. Then we go to August. No opinion of CEO. Proves of CEO. CEO. All this stuff. But what happened is I'm getting these screenshots that reviews, these negative, terrible reviews that I can't find online. So maybe I'm the one that's having trouble finding it, but I am searching through it. And, I mean, even if we go back to pre-Last Jedi, stuff seems to be a lot more positive. Okay, you know, some people, the main complaint is not enough money. Lucasfilm's cheap. Okay, I get it. They're not paying their people. But when you start to see these attacks on the company, people are going, oh, it's, you know, this feng shui of shit and all this negativity and SJW culture, this and that. Look, I see these things, and if it's the case, that's the case. But what's happening is I'm seeing screenshots of stuff and I'm not really seeing it on the site. And Glassdoor has said at the top of their site that you cannot take it down. They don't take down reviews due to trust or policy issues. Let's go look at it right here together. So it's, where'd it go? It was originally on their thing. It says you cannot pay to take it down. So, going by this, and it was updated on October the 10th, the stuff I'm reading online seems to be fabricated. And now, I love I love what we do. I love to make fun of what we make fun of. But I don't lie about any of this. So, I'm going to read you some of these screenshots that I was sent anonymously, and we can have a laugh, but I'm not finding it on the site. So this is my stance on the channel officially. If I don't see it on the site, I can't take these as fact that they were ever there, because they seem to fall in line with what we say on the channel. Now, part of me wants to believe, oh, it's just an overzealous fan of the Phantom Menace, but I honestly think deep down that these people would put these reviews up to look like it's people of the Phantom Menace making fake reviews, but in reality, it's people that are pro-Lucasfilm to try to make the anti-Lucasfilm people look bad. That's how I look about it. So this says, advice to management: forget the feng shui and wind chimes and other mumbo jumbo and get real. Be more realistic and professional and concentrate on respecting your employees and stop treating them with such total disregard. Same with fans. They made the company what it is today. Her fear and loathing of those people is legendary. Okay, so her pronouns, pal, meaning Kathleen Kennedy. And then here are a few more. Like I said, I can't find these on the site. So, it says, pros: beautiful campus and work environment, fab views and movie posters, a great team of talented, dedicated co-workers. I miss them. Cons: feng shui, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I already read that part. I am not kidding. Wind chimes were put to give the president peace and tranquility. In the meantime, terrible management persists and paranoia reigns supreme. I get tearful phone calls almost weekly from, spelled incorrectly, people who still work there and must keep their job. Too many incompetent managers and directors, while really talented, dedicated persons have to run to the hills to have been let go unfairly. And that's one of them. And then we have another one that says, some great opportunities but poor management. A personal pride that comes from knowing you work for Lucasfilm. The satisfaction of feeling like you actually take part in rather senior level type of decision making, even though you're not a senior level. That's a pro. Con: management treats employees like children, giving them virtually no awareness of the budget, process, or overall vision for the company. Sometimes, though, their most senior management genuinely didn't understand the business. Even the simplest decisions, like where to stay on a business trip or have to get approved. Also, and the worst part, senior management doesn't even know or care about Star Wars or Indiana Jones. Sometimes it's like these things are actively disliked. Advice to management: trust your employees and managers, appreciate your fans and the genius of George Lucas, don't be proud of the fact that you don't know Star Wars. Hire people, especially at the senior level, with both passion and talent because they exist. So I know the narrative would be fun to think that these are people at Lucasfilm that are tearing this down apart, but this, to me, just seems fake. Tim Riggs, thank you very much. Easy to fake those reviews using ViewSource, same as fake tweets. That being said, Glassdoor probably has a review dispute process for legal reasons. Okay. So, I gotta look at it from both sides. Since I can't find it on the site, I don't know if these were posted, but maybe there could be legal reasons, according to Tim Riggs. Tim Riggs knows his shit. I've met him. I'll take his word on a lot of stuff. Now, let's play devil's advocate for a moment, and let's think that these are real. Let's say that these Lucasfilm reviews are real. So, it sounds like the people take great pleasure in not knowing Star Wars. It's like when you're, oh, you like this? Oh, I've never heard of it. Ah, blah, blah, blah. Or, oh, I can't remember your name. You do these things to try to look aloof and different and cool, but you really just come off looking like an asshole. Lucasfilm is the asshole. Now, we can go and pick apart little pieces of information about Lucasfilm from their previous things. For example, that Star Wars website video where the girl walks in front of a picture of Luke Skywalker with an X through his face. You know, those types of things are very, very planned. They're looking for controversy. They're looking for us to talk about them constantly. They think that being talked about, no matter positive or negative, will actually help them. Like I always quote Oscar Wilde saying, the only thing worse than not being talked about, or the only thing worse than being talked about badly is not being talked about at all. Yes, that is true, but the people, here's the thing, I look at it like two groups for Star Wars fans. The people that they depend on to make the $2 billion box office aren't talking about them at all. The people that would be buying the books, the comics, and helping the toy sell through the roof are the people that are talking badly about it. Therefore, they're avoiding the property. So it seems like a review like this is oddly fandom menace like. They don't even care about Star Wars or Indiana Jones or the legacy of George Lucas, him being a great man and stuff like that. That just seems kind of bizarre. Now, unless this is a person that had worked for George Lucas personally, because they're called former employee, senior director in San Francisco, California. They just, it seems too convenient. That's why I want to get out in front of this thing right now. I'm not saying the person that sent it to me was fake. I'm not saying any of this stuff. But I'm just saying that this feels weird that it's no longer there. Like, maybe Lucasfilm is just trying to cover their asses very, very quickly. I would love to find out why or if this got taken down. Like I said, the website was updated about a month ago. Mareth Dialine, thank you very much. Sup, Jeff, working and lurking. Sup, Mareth Dialine. How you doing, man? I'm glad you're working and lurking this morning. Hope the eyes are doing well. Glad to have you back. Somebody asked for me to click on the job, so Lucasfilm has 13 jobs. They have an executive assistant, a director, live-action series development, director, animation, short film development, communications coordinator, and a few other ones. Paralegal, director, all kinds of stuff. Pipeline engineer, rendering engineer, full-stack Python developer. I don't even know what that is. Somebody with computers. So, that is this story. We have screenshots of it, and I take screenshots of stuff too, so I want to. That's what I would do if I saw something like that. But as of now, it has been taken down. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you think these are legit, or do you think this is bullshit? Chris Clark, thank you very much. What's, in your opinion, the best brand of Star Wars toys? Okay, so the best brand of Star Wars toys ever or currently? Let me answer your question. So I guess the best stuff from Star Wars right now would either be some of the The Black Series 6-inch Star Wars figures are good-looking toys. They have some really good technology that they've adopted from Japanese companies, like the face printing technology from SH Figure Arts. That being said, SH Figure Arts, that is a good brand of Star Wars toys. The best is the brand I buy called Nothing, because I refuse to give them my money. But Hot Toys are good. So Chris, if you're looking for that kind of stuff, there are nice things that are being made from Star Wars. I just personally will not go out there and buy them. But if you want some, you have more than ample possibilities to pick them up. That new Black Series Han Solo is nice. Grand Moff Tarkin, the new Princess Leia looks real. There's all kinds of great stuff out there. Kenner, yeah, Kenner's great. Let's see. I think it can't be trusted to be legit. Screenshots are too easily faked. It also confirms a lot of my personal bias, so I'm inherently very skeptical without hard evidence. Well, Tim, like I said, I know you. You're a no-bullshit type of dude. So there's my personal bias towards listening to you. But we'll see what pops up over the next couple of days. I will be looking into this story more closely. I just, only one negative thing about Kathleen Kennedy, and I can't really click on all her 25. She's not clickable right here. So 89% approve. I have my opinion of her. I think she's dog shit. I'm not going to change that just because of this this review or this whatever, this video that I'm making right now. I'm not changing that for her. I still think she's terrible. I buy stuff from my friends who keep throwing out their stuff because they're so pissed off. Yeah. It would be a juicy find. Like I said, I will continually look for said juicy finds, for these hot tips, these hot takes, these spicy things. I'm always wanting to, break the story, but there has to be an actual verifiable story, because I become just as bad as all of those people out there in the anti-fandom menace thing. That's really, not to paraphrase Rose Tico, but the way you beat them isn't with love or all this shit. It's with the facts. You just beat them down. Like, right now, we can prove that the Star Wars Resistance trailer, or not Resistance trailer, but the Star Wars Resistance Rotten Tomatoes scores are populated through thousands of accounts that are just people making accounts to give it 5-star. They have no previous ratings. They just joined. I mean, we can look at that all day, every day, and see the same thing. So it's the different side of the same coin. If we want to see Star Wars change, and first off to fail and then change, it's got to be through its own stupidity. It's got to be the cleanest of clean wins, like a Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3 victory. It can't be a Hulk Hogan versus The Rock at at No Way Out 2003, meaning The Rock cheated to win. Yeah, he won, but you don't look at it in the same way. You want a big, giant victory against Lucasfilm, and the fans can do that. The continued displeasure with them, calling them out, doing the things you do in that manner, will win. All you got to do is just wait it out. Plus, like I told you guys, the SJW people, all the weird crap, the fringe minority stuff, they always eat themselves alive. So Chuck Wendig, for as crazy as that dude was, all you had, let him say his piece, and he burnt himself out, and now he's fired. He may come back secretly under a new name, Charles Wendigo or something like that. But these people always eat themselves alive. And it never, ever, ever changes. So that was the Lucasfilm thing. I just wanted, like I said, to get out in front of that so no one could say, hey, did you hear about that, Jeff? Oh, I did. We talked about it on Good Morning Pop Culture. So now this next piece is interesting, to say the least. I think I might go into this a little more in depth, but I thought you guys would like this. It ties into Star Wars. It ties into Chuck Wendig. It ties into everything that we cover here in Fandom Menace, World Class Bullshitters, geek culture in general, and comic books. So, how Marvel and corporate comics are failing the vulnerable creators behind their superheroes. So, I would just like to get this out there now. I don't think Marvel and corporate comics are failing the vulnerable creators behind their superheroes. I think the creators behind the superheroes are failing the fans, they're failing the characters, the IPs, all that stuff. I won't even go too deep into this because I'm going to save it for a video. But to look at Chuck Wendig as the hero in all of this is very myopic. Because, let's be honest, Marvel exists to make money, to tell stories that people want to read. People don't want to read the garbage. People are tired of being talked down to from this place of privilege, from these dickheads that don't know comics, that don't know how to interact with an audience, a fan base. It's funny how, okay, look at Stan Lee. When Stan Lee was writing what he wrote, he wasn't just writing for himself, he was trying to tell the great stories, these great things that resonate with tons of people, these epics. These people nowadays are socially awkward, introverted people that write for themselves, and then they freak out and spurg out on Twitter when you don't like what they do. I think the best professional criticism is the one where people, the best way to handle that is, if you're a professional, is to say, thank you, I'm sorry it wasn't for you, blah, blah, blah. Even if you don't mean it. You know, as a public figure, you do have to have some semblance of respectability. And the comic book creators have shown that that's not the case. They do these terrible things. They write these terrible posts. They talk about eating assholes and all this stuff. They do these terrible, terrible things. And then when they get called out on their stuff for it, they're the ones that want to cry foul. Oh, I'm the victim. I'm vulnerable. I'm this, I'm that. That is basically 2018 in a nutshell. You can go out and commit these terrible atrocities to these fictional characters, cost your company countless dollars. Like I've said, for me, bad storytelling and this shit online keeps me out of my local comic book shop. But Jeff, you're hurting the LCS. What about, you know, your stance? This, look, I support my local comic book shop, but I'm also a consumer. I'm not going to go give Marvel sales and stuff because, you know, I like the guys that run my store. I'll go buy something from them, but it's not going to be a comic book. So, Observer Dude, thank you very much. What is your opinion on that movie where Spider-Man dances and fights the nerdy guy from that 70s show? Oh, you mean Spider-Man 3. My opinion on Spider-Man 3, Observer Dude, is that it starts out great. There are moments of true greatness, but then it falls apart and never really picks itself back up. So, where does it shit the bed? I think Spider-Man 3 shits the bed around the time of... I'm trying to think about the movie. It's been a while since I've watched it all the way through. I really don't like it. I liked it when it first came out. I was blown away because it was new. And then it just kind of went by the wayside. It shits the bed around the time Harry gets his identity back and Peter becomes emo. And, you know, after he kills the Sandman's legit, I think it stops being good once he kills the Sandman. Then it gets kind of hokey and weird. And especially that montage. And then the ending, you don't get a final swing, all that stuff. There are moments, like I said, of greatness. When he's in the bell tower, I think the best part of the movie, and maybe all the Spider-Man movies, it's just a small scene where he picks up the suit, the red and blue suit, and it plays the Spider-Man theme for a moment, and he knows what he has to do. When that hits, I'm kind of ready for the final battle. And then when Harry sacrifices himself, it's pretty good. But overall, the movie's bad. 5 out of 10, 4.5 maybe. It could have been better, but it wasn't. There are a few good third movies in a trilogy. That's true. That's very true. Indiana Jones was the best third in a trilogy. It still is. I mean, I know there's a fourth one, but there was that point in time where it was a trilogy, and it was the damn best. The top, the tits. Nothing. Nobody did it better. So, what is the big controversy in games this week? I know people were talking about the Diablo thing, and that came and went. But it always seems like there's another controversy in the gaming industry. I think we're going to slow down from controversies right now. I'm not saying that controversies are manufactured. Maybe they are. Some are. But not all. But I think we're going to slow down with the controversies for the time being. Why, you ask? Well, because it's the holiday buying season, and people want to make sales. People want to do stuff like that. So for IGN, they're going to want video game controversies to slow down. Yes, it gets them clicks, but they're going to want people to visit their sites and go to their what's on sale and this and that and all the other things. So unless something crazy happens in the real world, I expect a lot of these controversies that we've been covering for the last few weeks, I expect them to slow down a bit and then move into the next wave of something controversial next year. Everything's a controversy. Yeah, that's true. So, folks, I think we can stop the show because Brandon Moist is here. We've reached the top. There's nowhere else to go. Japanese developers must get their games approved by the U.S. arm of Sony to be on PlayStation. I did not know that. I did not know that at all. I don't think I've bought a Japanese-developed... Well, I mean, I can't say like that, but like a Japanese-inspired game in many, many years for a PlayStation. I'm kind of guilty. All of my PlayStation titles are all, you know, Wrestling or Rock Band or Grand Theft Auto or something. I haven't really bought... Back in the other eras, I would get all kinds of stuff. But not this era, not this generation. Did I see that Andre the Black Nerd shilled for the new Shira? I unsubbed from all of his social media. He lost his luster. He said so. I'm pretty sure he commented about one of our videos once. I don't watch him. I don't dislike him. I'm not a fan. You guys know my mentality. We're growing. We're doing just fine. I don't really need to attack another creator to get relevant. I called out John Campia. I've said what I've said. I feel good about that. Because I didn't lie. I didn't make up any bullshit about the man. But I don't really know much about Andre the Black Nerd outside of he's really not for me. I wouldn't necessarily say he's an outright chill, but those are the types of channels where they're excited about everything. Everything is awesome. They're like the Lego people. Everything is awesome. Everything's cool when you're part of a team. Well, I don't need to be a part of a team. I like to think for myself. Maybe I can be on a team of think for yourselfers, and we agree on a final goal. But it's not about, oh, everything's awesome. I love the new spider suit. I love this. I love that. And then there are the acceptable things to shit on, like the Bay former movies, like the DC movies. I'm not saying those movies are good at all. But what I'm saying is it's acceptable to rip on certain parts of geek culture and then other parts are verboten. Marvel, oh, when you make fun of Captain Marvel or something, people get pissed. People that say they like this channel, you made fun of Marvel. I'm leaving. Okay, fine. That's, you know, it's just me being me. I don't care. I like Marvel overall. I'm not happy with that. But it seems like when people of a certain level, or that want to attain that level, when certain controversial things come out, they always come to the defense of the company in the hopes of getting, you know, access, certain treatment, all of those things. I prefer treatment is the phrase I wanted to use. So I didn't, like I said, I don't watch his stuff. He can like his Shira. He's also pissing people off. I just don't see the benefit of the Steven Universification of old 80s cartoons. That's part of the Culture War series I'm working on, folks. It's just, you know, you go back and you mine these old properties and you try to infuse them with crap that nobody likes. And then you only hurt yourself. Let's see. MCU fans are cultists. Some people are, you know. So, yeah, shill media are corporate mouthpieces. They really are. They are corporate mouthpieces. And it's really obvious, though. They're not, like, hidden at all. They're very open. It's like they put the, you know, their title is just the name of the company, brand, or whatever, and then a word, and then all they do is sit and sing the praises of it and all of these things. And it's just, you know, very overt. It's really not hard to, catch on. Speaking of catching on, now this isn't true, but there was a rumor last week that Wikipedia was getting shut down and people were freaking out. And that's not the case. It turns out that they were just getting rid of whatever and it's moving to an app. So Wikipedia is still here for the time being. And I didn't realize that Wikipedia had a forum. Huh. That could be fun. Oh, well, that's a topic for another day. So we're at the end of the first hour. In recap, we talked about the box office. Surprisingly enough, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, The Grinch, actually was the number one movie. I thought that was going to be a bona fide failure. I enjoy the shit out of the cartoon Grinch. Don't care about the Jim Carrey Grinch. And I thought this would be too much Grinch. I guess not. I was wrong. I didn't see this one coming. Let's see. People are still talking about the black nerd. Like I said, guys, everyone has their own take, and everyone also has their own tastes. I don't know. I don't really need someone else's take on certain things. Like, I'm part of the geek culture, and I'll just go consume it for myself. Despicable Me Grinch. The Grinch Halloween is by far the best. I haven't seen that in a long time. I still stick by the original Chuck Jones, Boris Karloff won the best. Now, see, the Grinch movie that came out 18 years ago, I remember everyone being so excited to see it and how everyone loved it. And then I finally saw it, and I just was like, when I was like 12 years old, I didn't really like it. I wasn't impressed. People were blown away by it and all this stuff. And that wasn't really the case, for me at least. Was that Ron Howard that directed that movie? Should have seen it coming, man. I should have seen Solo. He warned me. Oh, so it's going to drop off because of Woke Potter. See, I don't get why Harry Potter's popular. I know this isn't even the proper Harry Potter film. It's like, what, a prequel part two? It's a sequel to the prequel or something like that. I see people come, like, be glad I don't own or run an entertainment website that covers all aspects of geek culture, because it would be really oddly disjointed. It would be like, this day in history, and then the big topics, but it'd be like, why don't you talk about Harry Potter or this or that? I'm like, I don't like Harry Potter. These are the YouTube channel I can verbally say, and you guys know, you know, why we don't cover certain things. Nobody here that has ever been on this channel regularly likes Harry Potter. Well, Phil likes it, but he's no longer on the channel. It's not even connected to the books. Oh, Cesario Japan. I saw that Pat the NES Punk and his buddy about the soybean fans. I saw the quarterings screenshot of it. Because, see, I used to watch Pat the NES Punk, but the guy with the glasses, his friend, just... I stopped watching it a while ago. I don't know what made me unsubscribe, But that was something I used to listen to quite a bit. And then I hit that tipping point where it's like, enough is enough. And again, I don't know why you would... See, the man baby phrase is so linked with Ryan Johnson. And then it evokes memories of all this stupidity. I don't think you want to use that in today's culture. Because it's funny. You may think that, oh, well, you dislike Star Wars. I really don't care. But I don't like the games. You know what I'm saying? But we're all like kind of in the same boat. We're a big, big, big group of people that are just like, all these things are very anti-consumer and we're fed up with it. And so, you know, when you attack one arm of it, while we may not be as passionate, we understand where you're coming from because we've watched our stuff get attacked. So it's like that old phrase, they came for this and I spoke up, or I didn't speak up, then they came for that and I didn't speak up, and then they came for